You get dinged up in last night's game? Or are you a weekend warrior that still thinks you've got what it takes to play, but nagging injuries are slowing you down? It's time to talk to some of the region's top sports medicine specialists. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. All you ever wanted to know about sports medicine and maybe, just maybe, a little bit more. Here are your hosts, Dr. Brian McCarty and big-time Mike McGivern on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host, Dr. Brian McCarty. Dr. Brian, thanks for the text during the Closet Concepts.
You're very welcome. That was very informative. They're terrific.
Did you hear me talk about the special guest from sports psychologist from Mosh that came in? She talked about organizational things, and David, I think, should have her on staff.
I think everyone should have Jenny Heineman on staff.
She's awesome.
Yeah.
And thanks for the text about me getting rid of some of my sweatshirts. The problem is I have about four different categories, the really big boy size, the not so big boy size.
Mike, you got to pick one size and stick with it.
Let's talk about injuries if we can. Our special in-studio guest, Dr. Eric Pfeifel. It's really good to see you, Eric, and certainly Happy New Year. I haven't seen you in a bit. Yeah, how you been?
Oh, great.
Yeah, busy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, watching football, getting ready for some playoffs. Very excited.
No, you're an Ohio guy.
Yeah.
The heck?
You know, even he doesn't sound enthusiastic about that.
I was so disappointed with the end of that Pittsburgh-Cincinnati game. Those guys just kind of lost their mind there for a minute. And
yeah, well, they deserved it. I'm a Browns fan.
I know you are, but you know what? It just didn't make any sense to me. Hey, speaking of NFL, let's talk Green Bay Packers. How are you guys feeling about that game today?
Well, first of all, I want to tell you guys, as you know, I was telling you last week that the Packers are going to win. So I want to just take full credit for that.
You went out on a limb on that one.
Secondly, I want to say that I can't believe Eric admitted to being a Browns fan.
I love the head coach they selected. I think that's a good move for them.
We shall see.
I know you're gun shy. I know you're gun shy. I didn't like any of the last three. I like this one, though. This guy's going to build the program. I believe that.
All right.
So getting back to our Packer injuries, which is a very long topic, by the way, for those of you listening. The biggest one, I think, is this Davante Adams injury.
Right.
Davante Adams was finally starting to get some separation, which I think he wasn't able to get because of his ankle injury. He never fully recovered from that, it didn't appear. And then just kind of bad luck. I think Richard Rodgers landed on him, and he sustained a what they're calling a medial collateral ligament sprain, which is an injury to, if you feel the inside part of your leg, it kind of goes from the femur bone or thigh bone down to the shin bone or tibia. So it's when it's torn enough, you can't cut on that injury. And so for a wide receiver, we always talk about every week the different positions. So Dr. Pfeifel, when you see a skill position guy like a running back or receiver, is it harder for them to play than it would be even for a quarterback or lineman?
Well, certainly we need to worry about in any sport the differences between position, size of player, activity, but also what their role on the team is. In a wide receiver or a running back, the need is getting into space, having the ability to cut with speed. And a receiver's repertoire, certainly having an MCL sprain like this, really diminishes their ability to have a positive role. So that's much more difficult to deal with as far as recovery compared to a lineman who is mostly in line motion and typically can overcome an MCL sprain.
So another question that would come up, I think, to a lot of listeners is why can't you put a brace on that? You know, we see a lot of people put braces on these, especially the linemen wear them all the time. Why is that more effective for them than it is at the wide receiver position?
For absolutely the same rationale. You know, their role is diminished. They don't have the need for cutting, twisting, and putting braces on diminish motion, diminish the ability to cut and turn because it's protecting that ligament. When you have those on, it diminishes your ability to do that on top of the injury itself.
You know, last night they replayed the night 49 years ago, the Packers and Kansas City Chiefs on NFL Network. And I watched part of that, and they replayed the game for the first time ever. And the way the Green Bay Packers played back then was that they ran the sweep. Mm-hmm. And they had guards that could get out. And I would think if a guard back then had this injury, they wouldn't be able to put a brace on it and go as well, because they were pulling out and trying to get down the field to get to that next level to hit linebackers and safeties.
You got to remember the guards back then were about 200 pounds too. So
yeah, they looked. It was really interesting to see the difference. Kansas City Chiefs were huge up front. They had big guys, guys that would play in today's game, and Fuzzy Thurston and those guys, they were not. They were much more mobile and athletic and strong than they are, I think, now. And I would think if it was back then, they would not be able to play or put a brace on it.
I think that's very reasonable. And I think if you look at some of the teams, even at the collegiate level, that have limitations on size, like the academies, they have to have very mobile lines. So when they have injuries, they're probably much more hogtied compared to the larger linemen.
Yeah, the one thing I will tell you, if you've ever been up close and personal with these guys that are so big, you can't believe how fast they are today. It's incredible. The game has changed dramatically, but yep. A lot of the reason you can't run the power sweep is because you can't outrun that defense. The defenders are so fast and strong that you can't get to the edge with your guards all the time like you did in those days. So very interesting how the things have changed. I'm sure it was fun to watch that. So
it was. Hey, let's talk about David Bakhtiari if we can. He's been gone a number of weeks now, and they expect that he is going to play tonight and hopefully make a big difference on the left side of that line. They gave up 9 sacks a couple weeks ago to these Arizona Cardinals, and I know Dr. Feifel's laughing, but
well, they were trying to build the Cardinals' confidence.
They did a great job.
Yeah,
slow play.
They figured maybe they'd meet him again and they'd think that they could win. So now they've got him right where they want him. No, having Bakhtiari back in all seriousness is a huge deal, and having the line back is a big deal. So we actually wanted to bring in one of our head athletic trainer for the Wheaton or the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine program, Mark Ahlberg. And we were talking a little bit off the air about how do you manage an ankle injury like this on a day-to-day basis as an athletic trainer. So Mark, welcome to the program.
Hello. And as we work with the different athletes, one of the things – at the level of the Packers, they're going to get treatments 2 to 3 times a day, in which we're going to focus on, okay, let's get the swelling down. Let's use ice. Let's use electrical stim, which is electrical current to decrease the swelling in the ankle and to decrease some pain. And then we'll focus on range of motion. We'll get them up moving limited activities. And we talk with the physicians to say, okay, what are our limitations? What should we stay away from? But then really push to get him moving, and that's 2 to 3 times a day.
So this is what he's been doing for the last couple of weeks, right? And so, Mark, once you get that swelling down, what's the next step in trying to get him back so that he can play at this, you know, NFL level?
Well, another key is to get the flexibility. They have to have enough range of motion. He's a lineman. He needs to get down into a stance, and if he can't bend the ankle enough, then you can't get there. So you work on that range of motion. You work on strength. And then we will break down by position, functionally do drills that they have to do, whether it be the first couple steps for alignment or whether it be sprinting and slowing down for a receiver.
We're talking with Mark Ahlberg. He's the head of athletic training for Mosh. And our special in studio guest is Dr. Eric Pfeifel. Hey, if we can't get to another player, Eddie Lacy has got a rib problem. And I don't know if it's bruised, if it's cracked. They really don't say, but you can tell by the way he goes hard for a few plays, but not a lot. And I'm sure that's an extremely painful injury for a running back.
Well, certainly think about any time you have a rib. If you've ever had a rib fracture or if you've had rib contusions, day-to-day life is tough, let alone having 250, 270-pound linemen hitting you and falling on top of you, and then having to have the wind to run and regain and get back in the huddle. So these type of injuries to the core, abdominal injuries, rib injuries, are very difficult for a skill player because they take hits, they continue to have irritation of the inflammation they have, and then they have to regroup. And it doesn't allow them to have the same amount of reps as they typically would have without them.
Does a rib, either it's cracked or a bruise, does that affect him as far as him playing, not so much getting hit, but running 20 yards? Does he get winded quicker? Does a rib injury cause any of that?
I would suggest that his running distance probably isn't affected that much, because when you break a run, you're just going. You're not really, But I will say the ability to recover and get back out there and get hit again definitely is a problem. Now, a lot of these, if they're broken, a lot of times they'll actually put local anesthetic around the nerves to dull them so they don't feel it as much. But, you know, there's an issue of expandability. A running back like Eddie Lacy is basically, his whole game is predicated on hitting defenders, really. I mean, you know, he's a guy who's going to come in, he's going to hit guys hard, and he gets hit hard. So when he's got an injury like this, it definitely plays a role.
Hey, a couple other Packers, and I want to ask you about the quarterback for the Steelers real quick before we get to a break. Josh Sitton is probable, his back, in a position that he plays. He has sat out a little bit of practice, but they feel pretty confident he's going to play tonight.
Well, certainly, just like Eddie Lacy, anything with the axial skeleton, the back, is going to be pretty tough for a large man who is in the trenches and kind of doing hand warfare. So these type of things will probably slow his ability to run and turn corners and some of his strength. But hopefully he can get back, because consistency is the most important thing for a line, much like the team in the OR. When we have a consistent team, things are efficient and run normally. When you have an incomplete line or a kind of line that is put together with a string, things don't work like they did a few weeks ago in Arizona.
Yeah, and let's hope that that all those guys get back. The last Packer I want to talk to you about is Sam Shield. From my understanding, he practiced, but he still has not been cleared to play.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit more about that in segment two, just because it's curious. You know, typically when you get cleared from the concussion protocol, you're cleared and then you're able to play.
Right.
So it brings up a question as to exactly what the injury is, and is it just a concussion, or is there more to it than that? Because otherwise you would expect he'd have been cleared, in which case he wouldn't be questionable. He'd be cleared.
Right.
So it's a little bit unclear. They're not very good at giving us good information on these injury reports for anyone listening. But if he were on our team, we would know whether he was playing or not.
Yeah, there's a question. Are they finishing the protocol today? I mean, I guess that would be the only reason why it would be, if it's only a concussion.
How is he able to practice if he hasn't passed the protocol?
Well, that's part of the protocol. So the last stage in the protocol return to play is you have to be able to clear it for full practice. So if he makes it through that and he has no symptoms, then they'll clear him. And that Dr. Pfeifel is right on. I mean, that's a possibility. It just seems like a very interesting coincidence that would happen the day before the game. Now, you know, are they doing that so that the Cardinals don't know whether he's playing or not? That's a possibility.
There's some games that are played with that. Hey, I'm watching the Pittsburgh Steelers game against Cincinnati Bengals. I was shocked when I saw Ben Roethlisberger go onto the field. And knowing, you know, not knowing what the problem was, I thought maybe it was a stinger because he was coming back in. And it wasn't. I mean, it's a pretty serious injury. They didn't think he could throw the ball but about 10 yards down the field. And now he's questionable for their game this weekend. That was incredible.
Yeah, they basically took him in. I think they thought he had a clavicle fracture, a collarbone fracture. And they took him in, got x-rays, showed that it was an AC joint separation, which is the joint between the collarbone and the shoulder blade or scapula. And I don't know this for sure, but I suspect they may have put some local anesthetic in there because he was their only backup quarterback, and it hadn't yet worked. So he was on the sideline wanting to get back in. And then, of course, only the Bengals would give him a chance to get back in there. And
without really doing anything.
Well, I mean,
Roethlisberger didn't have to do much.
The game was over.
And, it was over.
And then it wasn't over. And I think he felt like, well, obviously the other guy isn't going to make it happen. You got a minute and a half left in your season.
Yeah.
So he's going to give it a go. And he went out there and he threw the ball well enough to get them down the field until Burfict tried to take Antonio Brown's head off. And the rest is history.
Perfect segue. We're going to get to a break. Other side of the break, we're going to talk about on field like that, when injuries happen to guys like Adams and Brown. What happens, the who, what, where, and how the process of getting these guys off the field, where they go, stuff like that, and how to get them back.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everyone who's listening has seen television. They see the trainer run out there, and they see the evaluation. We're going to tell you exactly what happens, when it happens, and how it happens at the other side of the break.
That's perfect. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. ECR at Green River, brought to you by our special in studio guest, Dr. Eric Pfeiffer.
Now that's what I call music.
Boy, I'll tell you, I get more. even when you're in California, I get smack talk about my music selection. It was Christmas time. That's I was right. playing good Christmas music.
You did it. You did a fine job.
Thank you. Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Brian McCarty, my co-host in studio, alongside our two special guests, Dr. Eric Pfeiffer and Mark Ahlberg. He's the head of athletic training for Mosh. For more information, you can check out these guys, mymosh.com. If you want to tweet us a question, we'll get it answered for you. Hashtag SportsMedRadio. SportsMedRadio. And we will have these very smart guys, two of them, very smart guys in studio that can answer that for
two
you.
Two smart guys and your co-host.
Yeah, that's. I didn't say that. Let's just say it's two out of four. Dr. McCarty, we're going to pull back the curtain a little bit. You know, when you see an injury like Adams or Antonio Brown from the Steelers, they showed him laying there for a bit. But normally they'll go to break. Come back, and they may show a clip of him, you know, on a cart going into the back, and then people just don't know what happens. And you guys are going to kind of give us an idea on what happens from the time that the trainer and the doctor run out on the field to what happens in the back.
Well, you know, it's something we take for granted, and we're involved with it all the time because we're on the sidelines all the time, whether it be at the Wave games or whether it be at football games or whatever. What we wanted to explain to people is kind of what is the process, what happens when the guy gets hurt, what do we do, and particularly what are our roles. So I want to throw this out to Mark. So we're on the sidelines, it's at the Packer game, and suddenly you see Davante Adams isn't getting up. As an athletic trainer, what is your role? What do you do? What happens?
I guess the first thing is, an athletic trainer, we watch, even before we get out to Davante or to the athlete, are they moving? Are they screaming? I mean, some of those are positive things. Even though nobody likes to hear them scream, it means they're breathing. I mean, the first thing we have to check out, are they conscious? Are they breathing? Do they have a pulse? I mean, we have to look at the emergency aspect of what is this? And then once we get out there, we calm the athlete down. They're usually a little excited, and they may
have some... To be fair, they're usually really excited because they're upset. And when he says excited, they're freaking out, to be honest with you, because they're in a lot of pain, and they don't want to be hurt. So the first step is what?
I mean, you say, hey, this is Mark. I'm out here. How are we doing? Where does it hurt? You know, talking with them right away to calm them down. Then taking a look at things, depending on the injury. If it's a head neck injury, we have them not move at all. We need to check out that the neck is no concern of a fracture. So we'll palpate. We'll do different strength tests to the hands and feet. Sometimes you see that where they will check it and not move them. If we have any concern about a neck, we will end up either calling in the EMTs that are on the sideline or calling an ambulance and having them splinted and taken in for an x-ray.
Yeah, so that's when you see guys get boarded up, so to speak, where they're put on a board and they're taken off on a stretcher. That's what that's all about. So,
and why do they take the face mask off?
Well, you need to take the face mask off in case we have to do CPR, in case they could go into shock and have respiratory problems. Or they could, I mean, for whatever reason, diminish in their level of consciousness. We need to be able to do CPR in life.
Need to be able to access their airway.
Okay.
So the thing is, most of these guys, if you're concerned about a head or neck injury, you leave the pads and the helmet on.
Right.
And people often don't know this, but those face masks, you can unscrew the face mask. And so the trainers all carry this stuff with them. They have all this equipment. So a screwdriver, everything's ready to go to get that off. And when all of us have been there one time or another, it's a difficult and kind of scary process when you have someone who's not moving well and their airway's in jeopardy. There's a lot of things that happen in a big hurry.
Do you know, this is, again, a question from a guy that does some stuff on the sidelines, but certainly not. Do you just go right into Dr. Pfeiffer mode? Do you know what I'm saying? That you can't take this personal. You can't get personally invested. You know, you hear the hush. You see other, you know, you see players get on one knee. And you have to just get into professional mode, correct?
Yeah, you know, you take yourself. When I'm on the sideline of a sporting event, I'm a fan. I'm a fan of the team that I'm supporting, the kids or the adults that are playing. But as soon as we see an injury, and I watch very carefully, that hat gets taken off and I go into doctor zone, and you know, it, you get to your calm place. So things you've been trained for, you just turn off your fan mode, go into doctor mode and start thinking about prioritization, figuring out what could be the worst case scenario and then work backwards towards the least case scenario.
Guys, do you think that when there is a neck injury and they're taking the player off, do you think that they give the thumbs up on their own, or do you think somebody says, hey, look, you're moving, you might want to give a thumbs up so your family members that are watching know that
honestly, I think a lot of them do it just because they can do it. And, right. And so they want to signal to people that they're not paralyzed. You know, getting back to the simpler, but the less terrible injuries like this knee injury. So you go from that to then an assessment, right? So once we know that Devontae's, he hasn't hurt his head, his neck, he's breathing, you calm him down. It takes about a minute usually to get these guys to kind of settle down. They get this big rush of adrenaline from the injury, and then they're calmed down. Then you start assessing, how bad is it? And then Mark goes into, you know, checking the knee, and right?
Right. And you have to decide then, check the knee to see specifics on the injury. How are we going to remove him from the field? Are they going to get up and walk off on their own, which everyone likes, and,
right.
and you get the clap of the crowd? Or do we need to splint it out there on the field with some splints and help him off the field?
Yeah. So once you determine that he's not just going to go on the sidelines and try to rub some dirt on it or whatever, and you have to bring him in the back, what happens then?
Well, then he goes through a formal assessment. A lot of this happens right away, to be honest with you. If you watch carefully at a game, you'll see the training staff and often the medical staff. We run out together to a player that's down, and the trainer starts the initial evaluation. We will calm the player down, and once we've isolated the area of injury, we go through a rapid assessment. We assess the ligaments. We assess for swelling. We assess for deformity. We assess for bony injury like fracture, right? And because all of this determines, as Mark alluded to, how do we safely remove the player from the field to complete the evaluation? A lot of that information you can get the best right away, right from the moment you get out there. So the trainers like Mark, who've been really experienced, he and I worked together for years at Brookfield Central, and we did this hundreds of times. You know, that's the process. Once you're through that process, you get the player off to the side. Then there's usually, for our sports medicine programs, we have an evaluation table set up so we can do that on off-field eval.
Dr. Pifel, how quickly, let's use Devontae Adams, do you know once you what you feel the need, the injury is? I mean, whether it's a ACL or whatever the injury is, do you know relatively quickly?
I would tell you that I have a collection of diagnoses that it could be. Certainly we, by using the strategies that Brian discussed, looking at deformity, look at swelling, location of pain, you can kind of hone in on a grouping of types of diagnosis that are available. Can't always completely get it right, but certainly the initial evaluation of ligamentous injuries in the knee and the shoulder are very helpful in the overall diagnosis. But then needing the other evaluation in a controlled environment imaging to support those initial findings.
Yeah, another thing I'll point out that Dr. Pifel and Mark alluded to is, yeah, we're on the sideline, and yes, we're fans of the team, but we're actually watching very closely and very differently. We watch for mechanism of injury. A lot of times you can see if a guy cuts and turns, he falls to the ground. We already know the odds are he tore his ACL. If you go out there and you test it and you can feel there's no end field of the ACL, you know right then and there that's what happened. So a lot of it is, yes, we slip into that mode, but we're all kind of always in that mode, you know? I mean, I've been at car accident. The car accident happens. They jump out of the car. You know, I mean, that's just what we do. It's what, you know, that's what professionals do. You're ready to do what you need to do.
But it's different when, especially when you're close. I would see. I would think it'd be different if you're close to this team. I mean, if you're at Brookfield Central or Milwaukee Marquette, and you know these kids and you know their parents, it would be hard for me, I think, to jump to just take that hat off of being a fan and a friend to, okay, you got to settle down. Here's what we're looking at. You know, let's just move.
You're right, except that's what we do.
Right?
That's why we're there.
Have to.
Well, I mean, that's why we're there. We would be doing the exact worst thing if we didn't do that. I mean, that we're there being entrusted with that responsibility, and that's why we do it. So we're there to do that. And so when something happens, that's exactly what we're going
to
do.
And last question before we get to break. When the player is taken off and into the back, do you even get surprised sometimes like a Ben Roethlisberger when he came back on the field and he actually, you know, threw the ball a little bit compared to when a guy shows up in street clothes and on crutches? Do you know what I'm asking? If you see that.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, you think about Ben. He's a tough guy from Ohio. And he is a guy that has come back from injury after injury after injury. When he went off, I was not surprised at all he came back. If that were looking at some of the lesser quarterbacks around the league, maybe from Chicago.
Jay, what's his name?
I would have been very, very surprised if he came back and didn't have a grumpy face.
One of the keys about being the physicians and athletic trainers working closely with the teams is we know those that are tough. And those that may be like, oh, something hurts and it's a bigger issue. So we can identify, hey, this guy's down. You know, every game he's down and sometimes has a major injury but a minor. We know the guy that would walk out there with his arm hanging, you know, out of socket.
This is actually a really good point. What Mark is saying is that the personality of the player is helpful.
Sure.
And so a lot of, as a physician, we don't see them every day, but the trainers do. So oftentimes that's what we're kind of doing the show for. We collaborate as a team to diagnose, and then it's a question of, well, is it safe or not safe for him to go back? We talk to the trainer knows the athlete, talk to the coach, talk to them about whether he's clear to go back or not. So I think we should keep on this a little bit in the next segment.
Let's
because
do that.
I'd like to talk about that Antonio Brown hit and why what happens in that situation. Before we move on,
let's do that. We'll continue on the other side of break. Our special in studio guest, Dr. Eric Pifel and Mark Ahlberg. He's the head of athletic training for Mosh. You can check out information on those guys at mymosh.com. If you have a question, you can tweet us at hashtag SportsMedRadio, and we'll get that question answered. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. On the ceiling, the Black Keys. Dr. Eric Pifel. Green River, and now gold on the ceiling. Well done. Well played.
Thank you.
Green and gold. It's got us covered.
Got us covered. Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host, Dr. Brian McCarty. Two special in-studio guests, Mark Ahlberg, the head of athletic training for Mosh, and Dr. Eric Pifel. You can get more information, go to mymosh.com. Dr. Eric Pifel, an Ohio guy, feels pretty good about Joe Thomas, likes that.
He'll be back to Wisconsin.
I would love that. I think the people here
would
love that. Brookfield Central kid.
Yeah, I was covering him when he was playing there.
Boy, he was tough.
Were you there yet, Mark?
No, he graduated the year before I started.
Okay. Yeah, he was fantastic. Incredible. Nice kid, too.
Really. Hey,
not a kid anymore.
Not anymore. Can we go back to, we're talking segment two. I want to talk about the Antonio Brown injury. What was your first thought when you saw that, Dr. Brown?
Well, my first thought was he was unconscious in the air. That was my first thought. I mean, as soon as he got hit, you could see that he was floppy. You know, and so this idea that he was faking it was unconscionable. And obviously it's been taken back following the heat of the moment by Adam Pac-Man, great reputation guy, Jones. And but, you know, I understand. Look, it is what it is. But we wanted to talk a little bit about when that actually happens. And we've been there. We've all been there. When a kid goes down or a professional athlete goes down on the ground and you know it's bad. And that's what this was. For anybody who doesn't think that was the case, believe me, it was. Any medical staff there immediately knew that this was a severe injury, and you could tell how fast they ran out on that field. They knew this was serious. So Mark, talk to us a little bit about that. What happens in your mind, and what's your initial thought then?
Well, when we have a catastrophic or potentially catastrophic, because we knew Dr. McCarty said he was limp in the air. I mean, that is not a show. So We run out there and immediately it is to look at level of consciousness. It is to control the head because we don't know what damage might have been done head or neck wise. And as the physician comes out or the other staff is there, then we start to go through a checklist and have to communicate closely because the main person is controlling the head, that it doesn't move, that there's no damage caused after the person's there. And we're checking through responsiveness. We're checking through some neurological signs and everything.
Yeah, so the initial thing, Mike, just to clarify this, is we run out in those types of injuries typically as a team because everybody knows it's bad. So the physician and the trainer are also out there. Whereas the Davante Adams, the trainer may go out initially to evaluate the athlete and then wave the physician on if needed. So in this case, one of us, probably the trainer actually, probably would have been asked to stabilize the patient's head or the athlete's head. And then you're checking, you know, airway, breathing, circulation. Are they conscious? Can they move their extremities? And when they can, believe me, it's a big sigh of relief because I've been out there when they cannot, and that's not very fun.
Oh, that's scary.
It's terrifying. And when they're conscious, that's a very good thing. And so that's the process that you go through. So, Dr. Pfeifel, what would you do next?
You know, certainly the biggest issue there is, just like Brian was alluding to, the trainer is the captain of the ship until things get really, really rocky, like a floppy man, like Antonio Brown was. So in that situation, I'm out with the trainer. I take over the lead.
That was my question. Who's in charge at that point?
So the physician that's taking care of that team or athlete, it takes over the coordination, but it's a team effort. Oftentimes this evaluation needs multiple people, one for stabilization, one for communication, and the other one to start the emergency action plan. So in a situation where someone's lost consciousness, we're not going to risk anything. We're going to stabilize them. We're going to transport them off in the safest, smoothest fashion, either with an ambulance or EMT that are on the sideline, and then get to a further evaluation as soon as we think they're stabilized.
Do you think an injury like that, did they go into the back? And I know now in stadiums, it's totally different than it used to be, where there's areas in the back of the stadium that you can do what you need to do. If he has to go immediately to a hospital, does the physician?
Yeah, the back of the stadiums, basically, especially in the major sports, are hospitals now. They have everything they need other than an OR to take care of these guys initially so they can get them triaged and over to the hospital setting. We got to remember, these patients are patients. These players are patients, too. So you may wonder why we don't get to travel into the locker room and watch this. They deserve some privacy. So that's why people do the kind of a human shield and those type of things. But these stadiums are well-equipped, especially in the major sports, to get the initial treatment and then get them on if it's emergent.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. The question I think you were also alluding to was, do we then go right to the hospital?
Correct.
The answer is no, because we're responsible for the rest of the game. So we stabilize the patient, make sure that they're safe, and then the transfer physician would take over from there. After the game, you know, yeah. And we typically will go find out what's going on, go check up on them, follow up with their family, and all of that. But, you know, after these injuries occur, no matter how severe they are, there's always a communication process. And that communication flows as a team through us, through the trainer. So the trainer then often will go talk to the coaches because we're busy dealing with the injured athlete.
And then each of these guys have their own primary doctor, correct?
Well, the primary doctors in this setting are not relevant.
But when they get to the hospital, are
no,
they?
No, not really. I mean, really, their primary physicians in this type of setting are us. I mean, we are those guys at that time. And a lot of times, like in a professional team, you'll have, in a lot of our teams, we have primary care physicians who are part of our team as well. So they help with those types of things. But these emergency situations is what we are there for. We're not really there for a guy who gets a little, you know, scrape on his arm,
right,
or something. We're there in case something terrible happens. That's what we're doing there on the sidelines.
Hey, how much do you guys hate that scene in Jerry Maguire where they just clap? Do you know the scene I'm talking about? Where he gets knocked out.
Yeah.
And they're clapping, saying, come on back, come on back.
Well, but it worked. Mike, that was a different time. Remember, people, Hollywood is Hollywood.
That's what I'm saying. You must
do you know
that.
Why it
you
worked,
must
Mike?
That
do you know why it worked?
It was just a ding. That was just a ding.
Do you know why it worked?
No.
Because it was in the script.
It was in the script.
That's why it worked.
So that's so not a true-to-life movie
Real
right
life
there?
Doesn't work by the script. There's no script for real life.
Do you know what? I thought about that during our last break, and I would assume that guys like you must hate that scene because it makes those guys almost look ridiculous. So it's like—
It's Hollywood, man.
It is Hollywood. Guys, let's get to a break. Other side of the break, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Eric Pfeifel. Check out information on him, mymosh.com, and Mark Ahlberg, head of athletic training for Mosh, and Dr. Brian McCarty, my co-host. We're going to pick a song that I think that Mark Ahlberg might not like, but we'll come back with that one.
He's a Bears fan, so we have a lot of choices.
This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. And bad mistakes. It's been a while since a Bears fan wanted to hear this song. I'm just saying.
This is the Packer theme song.
Is that it?
Yeah, it worked last week.
It did. Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host, Dr. Brian McCarty. Dr. Eric Pfeifel is our special guest along with Mark Ahlberg. He's the head of athletic training for Mosh. Guys, this last segment, you were talking during a break about the emergency action plan. And let's just kind of break that down as to what that is.
Well, I mean, the emergency action plan is a guideline that's put in place for every venue, every sporting event, that says if we have an emergency or catastrophic injury, how's it going to go? We define the roles of who is going to do what, and, you know, so that we're prepared. I mean, when we go out there and things fall into place, some of that is hard work before and being prepared and talking with the team physician. Here's where the ambulance will come in. Here's the ambulance. Before a game, if the ambulance is on site, you know, we shake hands and say hi to them and identify who it is and that we know that person and what the signals are.
Yeah, I mean, I'll even go so far as to say, as a physician, and I'm sure Dr. Pfeifel does the same thing, typically we get there a bit early. We talk to the trainers on both sides. We talk to the officials and introduce ourselves, tell them where we're going to be should something occur. And then, you know, Mark and the training staff have done an incredible job with our supervision, but they do most of the work, to be fair, of setting up a plan of exactly what will happen and when, where the ambulance comes, how they get signaled. Even as Mark was saying in the break, even the person in the ticket office who's responsible for calling them and getting them in the door.
Right. How often do you go through that plan with the venue? If it's at the high school level, if you're at Hart Park, do you do that prior to the season starting and say, okay, look, this is our emergency action plan. This is what we need to have in place.
It should be done, reviewed every year. I mean, some Hart Park doesn't change. I mean, when we have Wauwatosa East that plays there and Marquette High School to play football there, it doesn't change. But if there's a new coaching staff, you need to review that. And just because they've done it for Wauwatosa East for football, they need to review that when track comes, and they're going to use that as their track stadium. So it's at a minimum once a year, but then also if you change the venue, if you renovate, you have to put a whole new one in. I mean, when you make a stadium turf, they change where the gates are. So you have to identify and talk to the fire department and say, hey, you used to come in the north gate. That gate's not there. You need to come in the west gate now.
Do you know, people have no idea.
Right.
They have absolutely no idea, and including coaches and parents, and have no idea that all this goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah, preparation and prevention are about 90% of what we do. It's getting ready ahead of time. It's making sure that we anticipate what could happen. Stratify them from worst to least, and then make sure that we have a good line of communication with all involved, players, coaches, families, agents, physicians, trainers.
Have a plan.
Yeah, and how much does it change, Dr. Pfeifel? If it's a playoff game and you get a little head ding, is it okay to send it back out there?
You know, certainly, when we talked about this at the break, is clarifying rules before the season starts. So discussion of what happens when concussions occur, when catastrophic injuries occur, because you don't bend the rules when things are at high risk, like concussion. neck injury, fractures, those type of things. Minor injuries may change a little bit, especially as you get to higher levels like professional, where lots of money is on the line, and this is these guys actually their occupation. But when it comes to large injuries like concussion, there should be no wavering.
Do you let parents on the field?
Typically not. I mean, really, if you're an on-the-field management issue, then that's not an appropriate place for a parent to be. When the athlete is stabilized and you get to the sideline, that's different. Then we certainly do, and we communicate with them, make sure that they know what's going on. But it's just like if you were in a car accident, you're not going to let the parents in the car. I mean, you need the EMTs to do what they need to do. The physicians need to do what they need to do. But what I always tell the coaches before every season, especially if we do have a change in staff, is I will do everything to let your players on the field if it's safe, and you need to know that. So if it's safe, we will let them play, and if it's not safe, they will not play. And there's really no discussion about that. And you know what? They're really grateful for that communication. So that's where the trainers are such an incredibly valuable asset.
Mark, how much communication do you have with parents?
Usually, it's on a daily basis. I mean, if there's an injury or there's a concern, it's daily that you're talking to the parent, updating them as to what the status and things are going on, as well as the coaches and the athlete themselves. I mean, here's what our plan is. And we lay out that plan and we communicate to the parents all the time.
You know, it's interesting. I'm really happy that we had this conversation on this emergency action plan, because, again, I don't think people outside of your bubble and your circle understand, you know, how important that is to whatever venue you're at, to make sure that everybody's on the same page.
Well, when you guys are coaching your next game, you will know now that there has been an emergency action plan instituted for your game every time you go play. And that will make you feel a little bit better that somebody actually knows. And you can concentrate on coaching, and they can concentrate on, your trainers and emergency staff will concentrate on the other things.
You know, I wanted to ask you guys, we only have a couple of minutes, but Dr. Eric Pfeifel, I'm going to ask you first, do you remember that first big injury when you were just starting your career as a doctor? Do you remember that first one?
Yeah, I will tell you, I was a fellow at Ohio State. I was covering field hockey. I had a catastrophic ball to the face injury, and I felt shivers up my spine. Turned it off, ran out, and we took care of the young lady. It ended up just being a dental injury, but she went down like a sack of potatoes.
Yeah.
And certainly it was scary. I remember it every day, and I've had multiple of those since, but it gets easier because you prepare yourself ahead of time. And luckily, just like now, I had great trainers to help me out.
Dr. Brian, same question?
Yeah, I mean, you know, to be honest, during our training, we see such catastrophic injuries when we're on trauma from high-energy car accidents and motorcycle accidents that sometimes you're really well prepared for that. So I remember a young man going to the sideline, got hit, fell down. We were going out in the field. He got up. He was on the other sideline, ran to the sideline, collapsed about 5 feet from the sideline. That wasn't a very good day.
No.
But, you know, again, he ended up being fine because we had all these plans in place.
You bet.
But scary moments.
Hey, guys, thank you very much. Mark, it's good to see you again. Dr. Eric Pfeifel, you as well.
Thanks for having me. Go Packers.
Yeah, go Pack. Thank you for that. We're going to tape that, by the way.
The Bears still suck, don't they?
They do. That's yeah. Dr. Brian McCarty. He is my co-host. Check out information.
It just never gets old.
Any of my guests at mymosh.com. Thanks for listening. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM. The Fan.